Blog Talk Radio.
We're going to talk about the NXT for November 30th, 2021, a go-home show, but actually a go-home show that has some stakes. Normally, go-home shows, just dreadful. I was not looking forward to this. As I've been kind of not looking forward to this show in general a lot, as it kind of gets through some growing pains and bumps and whatnot. And a lot of people have seemingly left for good. And we'll hear from one of those potential folks on email. You can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. You can call us 515-605-9345 and cue yourself for a question with star one. But yes, I had a lot of dread here. And I'm starting to wonder, am I grading on the curve because I kind of didn't mind this show and at times even sort of liked it tonight, kind of. I wasn't totally bogged down with thinking about everybody who's been let go to make what's going on possible. It's not perfect at all. And some people don't want to see they don't want to see people grow before our eyes, which I get. It's not their show. And I remain convinced that the anger wouldn't be there for this show if it wasn't for what people lost. Because it really, really is the same. I think Tom would agree that this is pretty similar now to what they were doing before the takeover era, where some of it's messy. And in a really weird way, that's part of the draw. I'm going to start with an email, actually, and then I'm going to throw to these guys. See, here's the problem. My phone's not sitting here, so I guess I'm just going to throw to these guys. And then
me to read it?
Do you want me to read it?
One of us could read it?
Go ahead.
Okay,
you guys,
all right.
You guys have it.
So I'm yeah, just because we always do this at the top, I'm at Tom Staub. And you know what? A quick plug at the top, too, because if you have stuck through to the end of our podcast, I've been plugging my actual play D&D YouTube channel. And it always has kind of bugged me that it's a YouTube channel, but somebody else decided that and they're much more tuned into the tabletop gaming world. And I was like, okay, I guess that's how people who like this sort of thing prefer to consume their content. But finally, we're getting it in podcast form. It is available in podcast form now. So you can go to at Tom Staub on Twitter and find the RSS feed and plug it into whatever your favorite podcast app is. And I'll save the details of the plug for later. But if you're familiar with Willing Creatures from hearing me say it, now you can listen to it the same way you're listening to us now. Anyway, email comes from Zach from Texas. Zach in Texas, as he usually signs his emails, regular emailer, longtime listener, really appreciate it. And he addresses, gentlemen, mostly Tom, it's time to admit the truth. NXT 2.0 is a bad show. I know it's hard because you loved NXT so much, and it's difficult to admit that a show you enjoyed has been damaged beyond repair. But NXT isn't the first show to be destroyed by a new showrunner. Old NXT was a wrestling show. NXT 2.0 is a sketch comedy show with a wrestling ring. The humor, with one exception of Tony D'Angelo, who stands out as the John Belushi of this group of not ready for primetime players, is pretty bad. War Games has effectively become NXT New Blood Rising. The women's division, once NXT's greatest asset, and Tom's and my favorite part, is nearly unrecognizable. With the Great Value brand, Beautiful People, aka Toxic Attraction, as the centerpiece, the division has been Russo-ized, and that's a catastrophe any way you slice it. You can hunt for all the silver linings you want, but that doesn't change the reality that it is a bad show, and people are tuning out of it in droves. The sooner everyone starts operating under that premise, the better off we'll all be. Zach in Texas. Well, I guess how many different versions of I think we're watching for different reasons can I say? I mean, I of course agree with you, Kelly, and I have said I have detailed on this show before, on this podcast before, that I feel NXT 2.0 is a return to, as you phrased it, pre-takeover NXT, which is an apt way to phrase it, I think. I think even though NXT's best years as a show, as entertainment, are during the takeover era, I always had my issues starting with Sami Zayn coming in, and Sami Zayn's run was great, of course, but there's still that little bit of like, well, this is developmental, and he's a finished product that you're using to draw to what Triple H said he accidentally made into a brand. So what are you actually trying to accomplish here? And that evolved all the way into being the counter-programming that we saw recently, which I felt was damage beyond repair. And so when the show, when the Black and Gold had become damaged beyond repair as it was, they kind of had to blow it up aesthetically to refresh from what it was supposed to be to begin with. I absolutely get what you're saying about the sketch comedy thing. So I think that what I'm going to say might be beside the point, but for what it's worth, and if you listen to 8 years back, you know that I'm a big SNL fan because I've been gushing about that lately, particularly that John Belushi era that I'm rewatching now. But even going back to the 90s when I first discovered wrestling as something I actually wanted to watch as appointment television, I've always seen the connection. And this is before I even knew that there was the Dick Ebersol connection in the 80s, which I think is less than coincidental in this case. I've always viewed what WWE does as very akin to sketch comedy. And I think maybe there's something that you can draw from that. And I'm just thinking of like creatively how they put the show together. But I think what you're saying is just that the comedy is bad and there's too much of it. And I guess, I'm not trying to convince you at this point, but I think all I would counter with there is that even though, yes, the comedy is generally pretty bad with things like whatever they've got Grizzled Young Veterans doing and what they've got MSK doing, there's much less of it now than there was just over the past couple of years when we had so much of the way and it was so hit and miss and I want to say usually miss, but even when it was hit, it was like, I don't know if this should be on this show. So, I think I'll just circle back to the original point that I just think we're watching for different reasons. I think like when, and no offense to Nate, of course, or anybody else who writes them, but I feel the hits and misses columns are a flawed concept because I don't like assigning things a hit or a miss. And boiling it down like that, even though I guess that's the point, is to figure out what it really boils down to. But what I mean to say is that when I cover them and I struggle to figure out whether something is a hit or a miss, you can go back to last week when I did cover for Nate, and it's a pretty even split. I think there are 8 hits and 7 misses. So, yeah, it's not a great show, but I certainly don't think it's a bad show. But I'm not sitting here like, if it gives you any comfort, if you're thinking about it, I'm not sitting on the edge of my seat like, oh my God, I can't believe, or I can't wait to see what NXT is going to do next. It's, you know, something that I feel committed to, and it's giving me what I want out of it because we're finally at long last back to the NXT that got me watching in the first place.
Yeah. So I did find my phone. So don't want to leave that out there as a cliffhanger. It was about a foot away from me, so you can see how I had issues. First of all, let's not like over-romanticize Belushi. I find that baffling. He's fine, I guess. Okay, so
not one of the better 7. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it another way either. I feel like we cover it every week. It's like it's not like I'm not admitting that this isn't great TV. Like, we're being very clear about what this is and what our expectations are. And it's just so many people looking at it through this lens of nothing but ratings. And I'm like, it's not the goal. If it was the goal, they would have, hopefully it's not the goal. Cause if it is the goal, now it's a mess. And I've talked about how that'll be a problem with USA down the road when USA is like, remember all that stuff you were doing that was drawing? Do that. And they're like, no, because this is what we need to do with this brand. And I don't think they are long for USA after whenever this runs out. I don't know how to explain it to somebody who keeps talking about ratings that that's not the goal. Like, there are so many petty reasons that this could be happening, so many. And we all know Vince and friends well enough, Laurinaitis, Pritchard, we all know them well enough by reputation to understand what a lot of these reasons were. Everyone knows what might be going on, and it's just annoying to think about all these reasons that this may be happening. But I really just don't even want to field another question about like ratings. It's not what this show is. That I guess is for the flagship stuff, Raw and SmackDown. But bad comedy? Oh my God, boy howdy. That GYV, Jiro and Kushida segment, with Briggs and Jensen showing up. I mean, that wasn't just bad. It was upsetting. Like, I was kind of mad at that.
And it felt like World War II propaganda.
Yes. And then
almost.
And as bad as that was, it gets, well, I can't say worse, but at the end, Briggs scratches his head because he's trying to think of what he's saying. I'm like, what I wrote in my recap was that's a middle school acting move. That is like first year acting students being surprised and then putting their face in their hands, or Tainara Conti, who does that when she doesn't get the pin. Sorry to take a swipe on Conti on this, but she does it. So there you go.
The end of Raw last night, both Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins put their hands on their head in shock at what had happened. And I thought of you immediately.
Oh my God. And Owens is so good. He knows, he's got to know that's not a real thing. Nobody does that. Nobody puts their head in their hands when they're shocked. It's not a thing, folks. Act. Nate, help me not kill everything.
I'm kind of in a mood where I'd like to see somebody kill everything. So you know what? I might just let you go. But anyway, that's completely outside of the NXT world anyway. I'm at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I do the NXT hits and misses for PWTorch.com, which I do have up on the website for you guys to check out as we speak. Okay, so I hear, and again, I mean, I feel like it's kind of like a broken record at this point too, because I feel like I've said this before, but like I hear everything you guys are saying, and I agree with everything you guys are saying. But then I hear everything Zach's saying, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, you establish a brand. You had this brand. You had this black and gold brand, NXT. And, yes, you started it from this little fledgling thing, and it grew. And maybe it was an accidental trip into a third brand, you know. Maybe it wasn't a calculated move. Maybe it was an accident, whatever it was. But you ended up giving us this show that gave us action-packed wrestling. It gave us what we got out of NXT Black and Gold. And people came to like it. People came to love it. You know, the last year or so wasn't our favorite in particular, but still it was my favorite wrestling show. And now it's completely changed. And I understand the reasons why they changed it. And all of that. Business-wise, makes sense, and business-wise, I'm okay with it. But as a fan, that took the show away. You know, it's not the same show. It's not the same show that I used to tune into every Tuesday, every Wednesday back in the day to watch and to analyze and to get on here and talk with you guys. It's a completely different show. And it's like I look at it, if this was a brand new show that was debuting that had no established audience already, like, you know, a brand new NXT or whatever, like, where would it go? Would it even have lasted this long? Like, I don't know. It's just like you establish that brand and then you rip it away and almost replace it with something that's to the people that feel this way in a more inferior product. You know, like I get it. Like in a way I do like the fact that they've returned to developmental and it's kind of a little bit more of a messy show and it's not quite as polished and things like that. In a way I do like that. But if they gave me that as well as the black and gold stuff, like and my NX, like I think that's what a lot of people really would have liked a bit more. Like they didn't want their brand, their show to be taken away. And that's really the big thing. And I think that's what we're going to keep hearing. And that's what we're going to keep hearing from people from until NXT 2.0 becomes NXT 3.0 or NXT 0. If it, you know, eventually goes away, you know, no, ratings aren't necessarily the biggest, you know, factor or anything anymore. But at the same time, if nobody's watching, what the hell's the point of putting on a show? So, you know, that's the other thing too, is it's like, yeah, the ratings aren't necessarily the biggest factor. And I completely agree with you, Kelly, there that like, they're not, but like the fact of the matter is people are tuning up. I don't want to watch the show. I said to my buddy tonight, I do not want to do this tonight. For multiple reasons, I got a lot going on in my life, but I've got just no, I'm not invested in anything really that's going on in NXT 2.0. Everything just seems like it was so rebooted and then kind of shoved in our face compared to what we had pre 2.0, black and gold. And it was such a stark difference that like, I still haven't caught up in terms of my investment levels. You know, I'm just starting to get invested in Joe Gacy. Right? Like he kind of captured me for some reason, and I'll talk about that when we get there, but I'm just starting to get invested in him. Bron Breakker might be the exception of the rule here, because I actually really like him. But for the most part, there's nobody else that I'm really invested in. And I feel like, you know, like that, one of the things that I wanted to say too is like the humor stuff, like, it's there, but it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. It's so main roster. I can't tell you how many times I've wrote main rostery or Vince and Bruce humor or something like that in the hits and misses over the past couple months. And it's not good. It's not funny. It's not, nobody cares. Like those PowerPoint slides that Duke Hudson brought out tonight with the haircut, those were horrible. They were horribly Photoshopped. They looked terrible.
That crowd died.
Absolutely. And it was the first time that Cameron Grimes is in the ring. And I was saying to myself, God, I wish this segment was over. And that,
man,
that
they could
have
saved
happen.
It if they had the Solomon Crowe haircut on there. That would have saved everything.
Solomon Crowe. I was trying to think of his name the other day too, believe it or not. That's weird. Somebody brought up to me the hacker guy from NXT. And I'm like, what the hell is his name? Solomon Crowe. I could remember Sami Callihan, but I couldn't remember Solomon Crowe. Anyway, completely beside the point. But yeah, like it sucks. So it sucks for me. It really does, because I really liked NXT Black and Gold from when I first started watching up until Dexter Lumis and Indy Hartwell's wedding. This isn't my show. I've been watching this show because I like doing this. For some reason, I like talking to these two idiots, and I like talking with you guys. So this is why I keep watching NXT, but I'm not enjoying it. Like, I'm not enjoying the show by any stretch of the imagination. There's been a handful of things over the past few months that I can say that I've really enjoyed. The main event tonight might have actually been one of them. Where I used to love almost every single segment on the show, or at least like every single segment on the show, now it's just not there. And I feel for people like Zach and people in my situation too. It's like this is the show that we loved, we grew to love, and it's gone.
Main event tonight, not even the match that I liked the most tonight, but I did like it. We're going to stumble through these conversations a lot. I won't delude myself into thinking this was the last one. On the other hand, I did think, you know, I think we could make it a breezy show. And here we are 20, 25 minutes in, and we haven't actually talked about any of the meat of the episode. Not really.
Welcome back, Nate.
Yes, indeed. So I guess we will go to, you know, let's go to a caller because normally we just start with the main event. They will ask us about such things or move on in other ways. And we'll get there. We're going to 410. I believe this is Reverend Keith. Reverend Keith, if that's you, say hey. If it's not, say hey, this is who I really am. Hey, how you doing,
this
man?
This is Reverend Keith. How you doing?
I'm great, man. It's great to hear from you again. 2 weeks in a row. How do we rate?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 2 weeks in a row. That's awesome, man. You guys are doing well. But I wouldn't beat myself over the head over this product. Actually, I felt that tonight's show was much better than some of the previous NXT 2.0 episodes. They advanced the storylines, and the two War Games Advantage ladder matches were very well produced. They were well worked. It was good selling, although the two people that I thought would win won. And I don't think this year it's a red herring, meaning that I think that the two representatives who were victorious in the War Games at Advantage ladder matches tonight will probably be on the winning teams on Sunday. As I stated with Greg Park Sunday night at Wrestling Night in America, that I feel as though Kaylee Ray will win for her team on Sunday to set up a future title program against Mandy Rose. And I also think that Bron Breakker or perhaps Carmelo Hayes will win for the heel team on Sunday. What are your thoughts?
Actually, my thoughts are exactly the same. I do think I would have expected those two teams to win even without the advantage. But the advantage, we've seen the advantage not come up big for teams a lot. I believe last year, both the teams that won the advantage lost, and one of them was the babyface team. The babyface team won the advantage.
That's true.
And then they lost the match. So, you know, bizarre. But I do agree for the reasons you state. I think it makes sense to put Kaylee Ray over. Production being kind of all over the place, and we're still learning where they are slotting everyone because they're not slotting everybody at the same level that they were before. So with all that, all those caveats out of the way, I think it's hard to say who for sure will go over. I don't think it makes any sense to put the Toxic Attraction team over when they have all the gold already. So I am expecting the babyfaces to win, and I'm expecting one of Toxic Attraction to take the fall. You could do something with them and Dakota not getting along because Dakota is crazy now, or some such. So yes, you could do something like that. I'm not sure. Hey, Dakota could even turn face, and maybe she'd be better cast as a crazy face. She was dynamite tonight. That match was awesome. I love both Kai and Ray. That was probably my favorite match of 2.0. Maybe somebody will remind me of something, but it was probably my favorite match of 2.0 so far. I thought it was just relentlessly energetic and fun and had a minimum of the stupid, slow climbing spots. So that, that was helpful. But yes, I think they will win for that reason. And I think the young guys will win in the established versus 2.0 match, because if not, then what the hell are we really doing here on this brand? And that will hopefully draw all kinds of reactions, good and bad, that I think is what they're looking for. But I would have, even without these advantage results, these are the winners here are the ones I would have expected to win on Sunday. Nate?
Pretty much exactly what you said is kind of where I'm thinking. So, you know, I was expecting Bron Breakker to win tonight. I was expecting Kaylee Ray to win tonight and bring the advantage to their respective teams. If, you know, like you just said, if the men's War Games match, if Team 2.0 doesn't go over, what the hell are we doing here in the first place? That's really kind of how I felt about it. Matter of fact, that's what I wrote in the Hits and Misses, which, you know, already up on pwtorch.com. Yeah, I wrote the exact same thing. It's like, if Team 2.0 does not go over, like, what's the point? Unless there's some big story that they're building to, where Team 2.0 really sticks it to the old Black and Gold guys. I can't see the Team Black and Gold actually picking up the win here. You know, it's kind of just where I think that's going to lie with the women. I'm pretty much with you there as well. I was kind of thinking we, you know, either might see Dakota Kai take the pin, as much as I hate to say that, because she is the only one on that team without a championship. But I think you might be able to see, you could see maybe if Raquel was to pin Mandy, that might work. Or if one of the two tag team champions were to get pinned, something like that could work. But my first thought was Dakota Kai takes the pin. But either way, I do think that, the other team is going to come out on top there. Yeah. So I don't have too much more to add there. I think, pretty much spot on.
I would be stunned if Kai took the pin here. I know that's a thing that they do to her, but I don't see a follow-up if that is the case, unless Toxic Attraction leaves her high and dry, and that, I might be convincing myself of something here. Tom?
As far as the ladder match tonight went between Kai and Kaylee, I am right there with you. And isn't that just how the chips fall? You could even feel it coming when Harley Padgett messaged us like, hey, just like you did the past 2 years, do you want to drop some audio for Grit and Glitter? Just like a little blurb along with a bunch of other podcasters talking about your favorite women's match of the year. And very sadly, I don't know if you ended up submitting anything yourself, but it was
for the same reason as you, but now I want to, if we have time.
Right. The episode did come out, earlier today, I believe. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, their episodes come out on Tuesdays, but it's Wednesday. Oh wait, no, it's not Wednesday. NXT's on a different night now. Yeah, no, it was just like, I can't think of anything that really inspires me all that much. Like if I did any audio about anything, I would be forcing it a bit, to call something, you know, to speak of something in that light. And then we get this match, which was absolutely great. And the only thing that held it back was the fact that they threw it out there as the open rather than, I mean, if they absolutely had to main event with the men, then I feel they could have done this as the crossover, and like at least they set it up a week ago, so we knew exactly, you know, what to anticipate. But I think throwing it out there to open a weekly TV devalued it a bit. But they were great, and like you could put this ladder match up against any classic ladder match that you can think of. Even some of the most historic ones, and it's going to hold a candle. I thought it was that good. Just my goodness, it really, really excellent stuff. And since we're there, I guess I'll just say that men's match also good. More fuel on the Bron Breakker fire that was already burning. Cool. I've got some other thoughts about the promo that the 2.0 guys cut earlier in the night, but I figure we'll save that. As far as the predictions, I really like the idea of one of – I mean, like you said it, Kelly. It's all about the follow-up here. Everything that's going on in War Games is about the follow-up, because these matches, these cage matches are not blow-offs of any kind, even with all the personal feuds in them. It's all just like the flavor of continuation that we're getting. So I like the idea of one of the currently de facto challengers becoming – having more of a claim to it by pinning the champion, but I don't want that to happen in both. So I don't feel super strongly about this, but I feel like Reverend Keith's idea of Breaker pinning Ciampa works for me for the men. But for the women, there's nothing more to establish on the babyface side. They're all set. On the heel side, yes, Toxic Attraction has all the belts, but they're new. And Dakota Kai, even though I still haven't detected any changes in her character, she seems like the same Dakota Kai, no matter how many times Beth Phoenix yells that she's unrecognizable now. She is, you know, starting a new phase of her NXT run here. So I think that that the heels should win and that there shouldn't be any anything like Toxic Attraction leaving Dakota laying or whatever else may happen to complicate matters.
I don't want to compare my girl Dakota to Psycho Sid, but it is a little like him winking and them saying he's crazy, and I'm like, no, he's mean and he blinks because he's got a lot of stuff in his eyes. Well, he's not crazy. What it seems like to me is they're trying to do a hard left turn with making her crazy. And they even said at some point, oh, she's listening to the voices in her head. And I'm like, but are you in her head right now? That seems like a lot for Vic to have to get over, like the voices in her head, if she can't do it on her own. And she's still building confidence in the role that she wants to play. Maybe she too knows, like, hey, I'm awesome now. Can I just be awesome? But that's me talking, because
I have an idea for a gimmick.
But there you go, opener and closer. These were almost these matches very close in time. Main event 14:11, and the women in the opener went 14:06, so they went about the same amount of time. Yeah. Just can't say enough about that. Well, I guess either match. A good story told. I continue to be impressed by the Bron Breakker story in that he's just – I hate to say it's just a story of he doesn't sell anything. But he gets back – the way I explained it in the recap is he's essentially Wolverine. He's got adamantium. He recovers really quickly. And he's a hunter, like, all the time. And you can slow him down, but you can't stop him. And in a match like this, just slowing him down a little bit is just not enough. So I thought that worked. He's got holes in the game, but he's getting there. And, you know, as a Steiner, he's always going to have something of a hole in the promo game. That's just the way it's going to be, but maybe he can improve upon what his dad and uncle were able to do. And the women, it was awesome. And it was I never felt like they were in danger. It's so hard to do a ladder match right and not feel like somebody gave up too much. But I was like, knowing they're going to have a match in 4 or 5 days, I don't remember what day it is anymore on the show either, it feels like they were still able to safely do a thing. So there you go. Let's go back to Reverend Keith, if he's got another thought here.
Yes, thank you so much, gentlemen. I do not like the Joe Gacy angle, and I'm wondering how far they're going to take this. It's interesting that they're putting him in a match against Roderick Strong. So that's one match right there that's hard to predict. But I'm happy that Roddy is still getting a push. And it's also good to see Kyle O'Reilly in a formidable title match on this War Games. I can see them going in the direction of having Wagner and O'Reilly capture the titles. The only way I can see Imperium holding the titles or retaining the titles, if you will, if there's a Walter sighting, because I'm beginning to wonder if he may appear at this show. It's just a thought in my mind, because we haven't seen Walter in, what, about 2 months. And I would like to see him, to be honest with you. I think he would be a boost to NXT 2.0. Give me your thoughts. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. Have a wonderful week and enjoy the show.
Thanks so much, as always, Rev. Walter, that would be very cool. But with the large amount of talents that they're trying to get over at once, including three that have not wrestled yet, we have not seen them in the ring yet. We just got promos for them this week with Tiffany and with Draco Anthony. And, I'm going to need a little help on the third one.
Was it the guy that we saw wrestle Sokoa?
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't remember who it was. It's a lot of people to get over at once, and that could really work against this show. Being 1 hour maybe would help, but maybe let somebody sink or swim before you decide to throw the next person in the water. Otherwise, they will all sink. I'm just worried about what will happen if they continue to do that. We kind of covered a lot of ground in this one. We talked kind of about the two Undisputed Era guys. You say you're glad Roddy's getting a push. I'm not so sure he is. I don't know. I don't expect Roddy to win this match. I actually expect Gacy to win this, and then there to be an end to the Cruiserweight Championship, because that seems the way that these guys would go. I think it's extremely, extremely valuable to have multiple divisions and then not just use one division to put over the other. New Japan has shown how successful this can be for 50 years, and you can still have an ace in that division, and it doesn't matter that they sometimes lose to heavyweights, but you've got a whole division, and they've got the talent, so why not utilize it? But I don't think he will utilize it. I think Vince has real trouble understanding the fact that big does not equal good, and I think that I'm full on expecting Gacy to win here and rebrand the title, and it will become something else, or it will go away. I really, really think that's what's going to happen here. As far as O'Reilly, it's what a weird situation that is, where he hasn't missed a War Games match yet. He's nowhere near it this year. We were talking months ago about how he was definitely the next champion. Now it doesn't seem like that's anywhere near the cards. He feels more displaced by anyone who's not there than anyone who's still there by the changes that have been made. I kind of might as well fit in JB's email here. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I think the result of the tag title match next Sunday says a lot about Kyle O'Reilly's contract status with WWE. The rumor is his contract is soon to expire, and Cole and Fish over in AEW have made allusions to an Undisputed reunion. If he wins, I can't imagine they'd be giving him a title reign if he was going to leave shortly. If he loses, I bet he might be gone as soon as early 2022. Similarly, I think this might be Gargano's NXT farewell tour. He looked like he was about to start bawling last week when Ciampa helped him to his feet. He got the ladder match this week. I'm skeptical that it was truly fans' choice, and he's getting his first ever War Games on Sunday. Listen, if it was fans' choice, Gargano would win. The way announcing talked about him tonight sounded like an appreciation post. The rumor is he extended his contract by 1 week to finish off the War Games story, and that WWE is still actively working to keep him, but I can't help but think this sounds similar to the Cole situation. Finally, I counted three video packages that either introduced wrestlers debuting tonight or who will be debut soon. At one point, it's too many. We covered that. Love the show and go VIP. Tom.
I agree that even though I'm really excited about the Tiffany one, just because I've been tracking her so far, you know, as much as you can these days, or as much as I'm willing to, I suppose. I basically mean I follow her on social media. But I just think the video packages have been excellent. But despite that, yeah, when we got to Draco Anthony, I was like, hey, I liked that. I'm intrigued, but all at once. And I was also skeptical. I mean, they've been straight up about the fan votes lately, to the point where there was one where, like, Michael Hayes got on Twitter, and he very rarely does so. He's one of those great follows because he doesn't really contribute all that much, but he's easy to follow because he only tweets, like, once every quarter. So it's like, all right, sure, I'll hear what he has to say. And one time he was very adamant that a fan vote, I think it was for the Slammies 1 year. And he took offense to fans speculating that that I want to say Roman got Wrestler of the Year. But I thought that Ciampa would run away with this, and you don't want to see that because obviously Breaker is going to win for the 2.0 side. So I was wondering if they worked it a little bit. I don't know. I voted for Knight and Waller, so, you know, the two guys who probably got, like, the least votes. Yep, yeah. I heard an inhale where Kelly was going to contribute.
No, I didn't even have my my thing on, but it would have been like, what a waste of time, Tom.
Well, you know, Knight proved himself in the ladder matches against Grimes, and, you know, why not give them... You know, why not put it in a feud context for a lower level feud like that? I guess the Kelly pre-rant inhale or pre-interjection inhale is just in my mind. But okay, so
I'm not saying they're not good votes. I'm saying if you vote for Nader, you got to know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. And I've
done that before. Okay, go on.
Yeah, well, you know, you learned the hard way. I still have people telling me every single cycle, and I'm just like, I live in the real world. Sorry, even if I'm plugging my nose in the ballot box. anyway, so yeah, the KOR thing factors into the tag match, which I could not believe that we got a finish. During the tag segment that I was just like, okay, whatever, the tag scene is boring right now, with the exception of seeing what, you know, where Von Wagner ends up, I would have put money on this ending up as a triple threat at War Games. So I'm surprised it's a straight up 2-on-2. Wagner, I mean, at this point, since he's been in the PC for so long, he'll probably always look as awkward as he does, making so many more movements than he needs to for even the simplest of actions. But like I've said before about him, that just seems to be how he goes about it. It looks really weird, but he's doing well so far. I thought it was strange that, again, with the incredible women's match opening, that they used sexual tension between Zion Quinn and Electra Lopez to be our crossover intrigue, which, correct me if I missed anything, and I saw the follow-up segment that they did outside also, I don't feel like that went anywhere. I don't feel like they said anything. I don't think it amounted to anything. It was just like, okay, this is still happening. Tag match was good, though, and the Kyle O'Reilly thing, I don't think that whether or not he becomes a tag team champion again on Sunday is going to be a hint as to his contract status, because Imperium's title reign, remember where Imperium was after a couple teams after Team 2.0 got or Team 3.0, whatever they call themselves, got released, and after Drake and Maverick, I called them that so many times. You know who I'm talking about. After they weren't a thing anymore, Imperium was bottom of the totem pole, and the least likely to. I mean, Birch and Lorcan were more likely to recapture the tag titles before Lorcan went packing than Imperium was. So the only thing, the only reason Imperium could possibly be holding the tag titles is leading to Walter's reappearance. So I do not think that Kyle O'Reilly has any chance of becoming tag team champion on Sunday. Wasn't there another? Oh my goodness. The Joe Gacy thing. Here's my entire note that I wrote down on the whole Joe Gacy thing. IDK man, pass. I don't know what to make of this. I thought tonight was just atrocious. I started to get annoyed by Gacy last week, and I was like, oh, I think, you know, I definitely see what you guys are saying, or what, you know, what you, Kelly, are saying, and I've seen it all along. I've been more forgiving of it. And I feel like it's more in character, like I'm annoyed with him in the way I'm supposed to be. I have no idea what the heck they were trying to do tonight. I have no idea why he and Roddy are wrestling for the Cruiserweight Championship on a special event. It was so bizarre to me. Seems like it was pulled out of left field for lack of knowing what else to do with these guys at this time. Which is why it's weird that it's ending up at a special, because that's where it seemed like it came out of. So when you tell me you think Gacy's going to win and retire the belt, I love that idea, because at least there's a reason for it. And that belt has been overdue for retirement for a while.
I think it's overdue to just be made good. But if they're not going to make it good, then there's no reason for it to be there. I know you've been forgiving of Gacy, but I think, honestly, he exists to feed the ego of three old white men who don't realize that the character archetype they're attacking largely is a figment of their chosen media's imagination.
I guess the
crossover too far.
No. Yeah. We already went, you know, did the third party thing. I will say that a lot of it would work better for me if I felt he was a better wrestler. And tonight went okay. Tonight's little squash went okay. And I even tried to force myself to enjoy the, like, hey, here are the subjugated people. Now watch me beat them up. I feel like that's something I would enjoy in a different context, but so much of tonight was just like, IDK man, pass.
I hope Harley was watching tonight, because he has wanted to see. He talked about intergender matches happening on NXT for so long, and you and I are like, dude, Vince isn't going to do that. He's not. Like, we just kept saying it. He was like, he was so starry-eyed, like the kind of guy who would vote for Nader and not know how useless that was.
And I was even more on Harley's side for a lot of that, because I see it the way he does, I feel. But then there's also the reality of it that, of course, they're going to have Malcolm Bivens interrupt.
Yeah, I would have liked to see it, too. I don't think they will. So I don't know what I was expecting when that person came in, but when it was interrupted, I was like, of course it's interrupted. Everything on this show is interrupted all the time. Mackenzie did get through one interview this week that was not interrupted, but one is pretty much her best case scenario now. There's a lot of ground here, Nate. Cover some of it.
Okay, let's cover some of it. So let's start with the Joe Gacy stuff, because I actually am kind of starting to turn on Joe Gacy, and I mean turn in a good way on Joe Gacy, because I wasn't really feeling it at first. And I don't know if, like, maybe it's because I've just recently started to get, like, on a true crime kick, and I've been listening to a lot of, like, YouTube videos and documentaries and stuff on, like, serial killers and whatnot. I don't know why, just kind of random in the background while I'm working stuff. But I'm kind of starting to dig what Gacy's doing. I don't know where the hell it's going, and it doesn't really make sense, but like that dark and sinister undertone to everything that he's doing and everything that he's saying. Because, I mean, clearly, like, he's, you know, he's preaching inclusivity and he's preaching all these, you know, liberal left-wing, super left-wing stuff. Like, but you know that there's those, like, dark, sinister undertones under there. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens when they come out. I'm kind of giving it a little bit of some more rope here, if you will. Just enough to hang itself. Just enough to hang itself with, because, like, I kind of like it, but I see exactly what you guys are saying at the same time, and I kind of think it's probably going to flop rather than succeed, but, like, there's just something there that I'm kind of liking, and I'd like to see maybe succeed. Like I've said in the past, I could see kind of, like, Gacy doing some sort of a Wyatt family-esque, you know, thing, and, I mean, a lot of people are saying that. Brand new revelation that I just said there, but yeah, I could see him certainly doing something like that and flourishing with it. I kind of like the way his delivery is. Yeah, his wrestling, I'm not 100% sold on myself. He could certainly be a better wrestler, but I think for the character, I think it kind of works. I'm not sold 100% yet, but I'm starting to get there a little bit, and I'm curious to see how this character fleshes out, and if he ends up gaining any more followers outside of Harland, or if it's just this one, you know, kind of brooding, tattooed bald guy. But I do like what they're doing there. With what else were we talking about? I remember Gacy. With the cruiserweight title. So I kind of am the same camp as Kelly right here. I'm thinking that they might even just either retire the title, rename it, or do something like that, because this is a weight restricted belt, and if Joe Gacy wins it, I mean, come on, Joe Gacy, he's not 205 pounds, you know, I mean, I'm just stating facts, I'm not trying to weight shame, fat shame, nothing like that. He ain't 205. So
man,
if
you're
win,
so exclusive, Nate.
I know, right? But, like, so he wins the belt. What exactly does that mean? It completely just takes the meaning of that title and that division away altogether for whatever meaning that division has left in the first place. So either for that reason, he doesn't win and it continues being the cruiserweight title and goes from there, or he does win and either he holds a cruiserweight title and it further declines that the reputation of that title, the meaning of that title, and division overall, or, you know, it somehow gets rebranded into the European Championship of NXT, you know, some third tier men's title or something, which I really don't want to see. I like the fact that the Cruiserweight Championship was a separate, like, division, and I mean, you know, technically has their own show, 205 Live, I think that's still a thing. Whatever, but I wouldn't want to see them make, like, you know, a United States title or something like that for NXT. I think that's crowding it way too much. Let's see, then we were talking about Von Wagner, Kyle O'Reilly. I'm torn on this one because at first I was in the camp of Kelly, of Kevin, Jesus Christ, Nate, speak, Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner winning the title here. But then I was listening to what you were just saying, Tom, and you kind
it'd
of,
be cool if, it'd be cool if I won the championship too. So, you know, if you didn't misspeak, that's great.
I'd love to see you in the ring get your ass kicked. Why not, right?
I would have no chance against literally anyone.
I was kind of in that camp to see KOR and Von Wagner win the belt. And then listening to Tom, I'm kind of there. I'm kind of thinking about that too. Like, you know, Imperium, Walter, if Walter shows up and Imperium have the tag team titles, that kind of gains more, you know, credibility to Imperium, whose credibility has completely fallen from where it was, you know, a couple of years ago. So I'm kind of torn there. I'm kind of torn. I would not be surprised actually either way. I think I'd kind of be okay with it either way. Von Wagner and Kyle O'Reilly, I think a little less okay, simply because it's such a weird pairing. I feel like Kyle's almost being a little wasted down in this tag team pairing with Mr. Creator Wrestler guy here, Von Wagner. But on the flip side, like, I would like to see Imperium retain simply because they would look good holding the two titles next to Walter. So that's kind of where I'm at with all of that stuff. And I don't really think I have much more to add from what you guys have already said.
And of course, I want to hear the Von Wagner thing.
Is Von Wagner a create a wrestler, or is he create a 1930s Hammer horror villain?
He's definitely
Frankenstein. Yeah,
definitely
the
creator
first Frankenstein when they changed the makeup and it just looks like he's wearing a shoebox on his head. It's like, I think you guys needed to bring that one back to the drawing board. Where did Christopher Lee go? The only thing about the Imperium theory is that Walter is not going to be pleased if they lose. So if they lose, that would spur him to show up. But my argument there is just that they'd been losers for so long and he didn't show up. So I don't know.
Yeah, Alexander Wolf lost a match and he beat him out of the company. So they got to hope that they're going to win. Yes, we covered lots of stuff there. I crossed off like half the show. So
well, hey, we've still got that Chaparata match later.
Oh, thank God. Thanks for making that compartmentalized there, Rev Keith. We are going to go to one of our best buddies, Darrell Freeman from Georgia. Darrell, how are you doing? Are you still there? Sorry we made you wait so long.
Oh, man, that's cool, man. How y'all guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I don't know. I was going to throw in some personal stuff, but I probably shouldn't.
I'm fantastic.
Thanks, man. Thanks for bailing me out. That's what you guys are for. Tom, are you good?
I hope y'all creator wrestler is a whole lot better than Von Wagner, because if that's so, y'all making some of the blandest, driest.
No, that Von Wagner was my creator wrestler when I was like 13 years old.
I don't
to answer your question, Kelly, I am not good.
Wrestler.
I am well.
Oh, thanks. We are all over the map right now. Thank you for.
We need to bring in another caller, two more callers, have a third conversation going right now. Really confuse everybody.
Well, that would be very 2.0. Sorry, we got so many damn people here.
Here we go with the interruptions. 2.0. I had to do it.
Like the booth in Naked Gun where they got Dr. Joyce Brothers and like seven other people. Oh, everybody gets my 1989 movie references. Darrell, go ahead.
I was only one.
Oh, man, it was good hearing y'all talk about my girl, Kaylee Ray. You know, that had to be one of the best opening I've seen, in, especially NXT, in a while, like opening matches. So I'm glad y'all talked about it so I didn't have to get on here, because, you know, that was going to be my number one thing was her. But just to go on to something different, tonight, I guess talking ain't the strong point, because tonight, every talking segment to me was horrible. I mean, like, extremely horrible. And after last week's show, which I thought was the stupidest show of all time, I just called into the show to talk to you guys and hear y'all point of views, because I don't think I got too much of it. But outside of that, though, what do you guys thought about the talking segment? The worst two ones was Joe Gacy, the Gacy one, that killed the crowd, and the 2.0 guys who killed the crowd again. That crowd seemed like it was dead until that match started, that ladder match started. It looked like it was dead for like an hour or so, and that first hour seemed so long. But what did you guys think about those talking segments?
This crowd went to sleep for kind of a while. After that thrilling opener, we didn't hear him for a while until the crossover tag match. And then in the crossover tag match, the crowd got weird. They did a That Was Three chant, and they did it for the heels, and then they did it for the faces, for Wagner, who they were booing. And it was odd, and it was – maybe it's becoming a thing. I don't want it to become a thing for crowds to chant That Was Three every time that it's two. But if there's any crowd that would do it, it's this one. Yeah, talking segments, there's some growing pains. I actually didn't hate the 2.0 guys talking, but part of that is because I don't hate them. They're not going to get particularly good at giving these in-ring live promos that are televised unless they do them. That's throw them into the fire. I'm fine with that. And this was very Survivor Series to me, this segment, because each one of the four zeroed in on one guy that they really, really want to take down, which is something they always used to do during early Survivor Series for us old guys, which, you know, at Nate, you have to be out of that because you were zero when the first one came out in 1988.
No, I was like 7 months old, something like that.
Okay, so you were alive when the first one happened. Oh, actually, there might have been an
87.
There
yeah.
is an 87.
I was
yep.
I was
okay.
almost
okay.
positive, but I did have to Google to check. Full disclosure.
Yep, I remember it now. Andre wins the main event, and I'm like, oh my god, pay per view. The heel wins. That's not a thing. I can't believe they did it. But they did. They did do that thing. So, where were we? We're all over on this show.
We were just talking about how old you are.
Oh, yeah. We sure
old
were.
Enough to have seen the Thanksgiving episode of Cheers that aired before the first Survivor Series, where at Thanksgiving at Norm's house, they tune in to WWF Wrestling, which would not have been on that date. And that's always what I think of when I think of the earliest Survivor Series.
It's, you know, this is why you listen to the podcast, gang. You can't get that information anywhere else other than the place where Tom got it. So, yes, I liked the approach to this promo that these guys gave, which is weird because the approaches to the promos are mostly what suck right now. The approaches to the characters and the broadness of the characters, this is very much old school pro wrestling, and then them saying, well, this worked for so long. Okay, it doesn't work now. So diversify, that's what you got to do. The stuff that worked all those years ago doesn't always work now. I didn't hate or even particularly dislike the segment with the four guys. It didn't super engage me, but I thought they each were okay, given that the content handed to them was very basic. Easily the worst talk segment, if it can count, was Grizzled Young Veterans Jacket Time Briggs and Jensen. That was really upsetting. I don't know, Indian Persia was not, they had their segment where Indy got the call and the doctor, who for some reason was on speaker, said, Dexter is gone. And I was like, okay, somebody watched Arrested Development and they saw that the doctor always accidentally makes it seem like somebody's dead. That was, it seems like, I don't think Indy's dead in the water here, but I feel like she's taken a big – she was most harmed by the breakup of the Way. Not that they've broken up as exactly, But, you know, in the wake of whatever's happened there, it seems like she's floundering. And now she's being asked to be a pro when really she's still kind of learning. That's kind of tough. Other talk stuff I thought was mostly middling, other than the embarrassing stuff that happened with Hudson and Grimes, which is too bad because you can set your watch to Grimes being in a feud that no matter what's on the page, he's making it elevated. But they only had him say a few words, which I get because Hudson's the one they're trying to promote, but they didn't do him any favors with that bullshit, terrible crap they had on the Tron that I felt dumber to have watched. Tom?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to focus in on the 2.0 guys because you covered everything else nicely, and we'll talk about the surrounding matches when we get there. But so I did not doubt that you would draw the same correlation, even though, as I stated earlier, I didn't come into watching wrestling as appointment television until the 90s, until the late 90s. I, too, had the exact same old school Survivor Series thought with these guys standing there and each having their own agenda and each having, you know, yes, doing the WWE turn-taking promo thing. Honestly, I thought this was not just really good, but it was the best segment that a lot of these guys have individually been involved in, and they all had it at once together. I really thought this was effective in selling me on their goals for a match that really had not been adequately built. And each of them had their own individual voices and their own individual targets and articulated well and felt comfortable out there. And Breaker felt like the star. Carmelo felt like a star in the making, I guess. Even D'Angelo feeling like the odd duck among them, it still felt, I don't know, it fit for me. It worked for me. I really, really thought this was strong for these guys. And I thought it was, I guess I'll use the word interesting, that they're not just signaling to people who mourn the black and gold with Ciampa being the champion and putting the black and gold guys together and everything. They're actually now having Gargano come out there and call, I mean, he didn't say redesign, he didn't say Capital Wrestling Center or whatever, but he said unicorn vomit. And obviously that is, you know, appealing, you know, he's the babyface and he's appealing to, I mean, we're in a situation where the babyfaces are appealing to the people who hate the product. And he's saying unicorn vomit to be like, see, I don't like it either. And just try not to think about the fact that all of you seem to love the philosophically corrupt show on the other channel that also uses rainbow splashes in its marketing and in its set design. But nobody seems to criticize that. So whatever.
I think the stuff that Liv did they're doing more of that. Like,
I noticed the correlation, actually. Yeah, I thought, and, you know, Edge mentioned something, too. And I was like, what? Tangential. When Edge said what he said, I was like, what is he? Is he talking about Dancing with the Stars? What the hell is he talking about? And I didn't realize that. Oh, what, I want to say one of those chuckleheads, but MJF is actually good. That, you know, one of those people over there, they can't exist without acknowledging WWE every two sentences. So there you go.
You said people over there. What's up? I had to.
Stop.
I had to.
That, I did not see that coming.
Oh, God, it's been a long day.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Have I thrown to you?
You haven't.
Go ahead and be thrown to.
I'll be completely honest.
And tell me what you think of the rainbow splashes and Nickelodeon vibes over there in the AEW commercials and lighting scheme.
Tom, stop.
Oh, God. Doug, you know what? I actually haven't even seen like the commercials. I don't really watch TV outside of wrestling. I'll be honest. Like, I'm watching streaming services and other things, and I make sure I pay for things to make sure I don't get ads. And since I'm an IT guy, I know how to get around ads anyway. So I don't really get to watch a lot of ads, thankfully.
I have no idea if they're still doing it. I just remember, I think it was when Dynamite started, and it lasted for as long as I cared to pay attention. With the lighting scheme and the rainbow colored powder that flew out of people's kicks and punches and whatnot, and I remember even seeing it lauded because, oh, rather than just being the red brand or the blue brand, it's going to be the rainbow brand, and that's so progressive. And, you know, don't we all just want to climb into bed with Tony Khan? I had to throw that one in, didn't I?
You did.
That got weird.
That got weird quick. That got weird quick. Anyway,
talk relentlessly so Tom doesn't interject.
Okay, talk relentlessly. So I'll talk just a little bit about
He pays well.
Oh God, it's the interrupting of 2.0. Interrupting 2.0. There's a joke.
I feel like Mackenzie Mitchell.
Crap, I don't even remember what we were talking about at this point. So, really, the talking segment. There's two talking segments that I really want to touch on. First one is the Grimes and Duke Hudson, and mostly I just want to point out once again just how bad it was. Duke Hudson, like I feel like what he for what like the material he was given, he did a good job, like in his presentation and things like that. But like, it's just bad material. It had Vince humor written all over it. You know, ha ha, look, you're going to be bald. Ha ha, you're going to have a different beard. Ha ha. Vince is laughing. Nobody else is laughing. The entire crowd died. I'm sitting here like, what the hell? Like I said earlier in the show, it was the first time Cameron Grimes is in the ring or in a segment, period. And I'm just waiting for it to be over. And I hate that. I hate that I have to say that, but I have to say that. It's just awful. Like the poor Photoshopped graphics, everything is just bad. The only other thing that I'll really add to the talking segment with the four 2.0 guys, well, I guess five 2.0 guys, Trick Williams is there as well. Really, the only thing that I can think of that you guys haven't touched on yet is when Johnny Gargano came out and he called Bron Breakker the big bad booty nephew. Did you see the look on his face? He had this look on Bron Breakker, this look in his face like, man, why'd you say that? Because, of course, crowd started chanting that.
Yeah, crowd picked it up. He looked like that way right away, but the crowd picked it up, and then he was like, oh, no, it's a thing.
This can't be a thing. I know. Yeah. Like that, he had that look on his face, like, God, no, please don't make this my thing. Please, like your Sheamus is like, you look stupid. There was the first, like, I don't know why the Sheamus you look stupid thing is the first thing that came to my mind when that happened. But like, that's really the only thing extra that I wanted to point out, because I just saw the look on his face. They captured it perfectly on TV, and it was just like, I want to know if Gargano, like, just ad-lib that, because I feel like if anybody has a little bit of leeway to do some ad-libbing in NXT, it's going to be Gargano, Ciampa. If you ad-lib that, or if that was part of the thing, because, like, it almost looked like it pissed Bron Breakker off. It didn't look like he was acting there. It looked like he was actually
less ad-lib and more let's see how the kid responds, because we know they love to do those moments.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. That could definitely be.
Okay, so Darrell, will throw to you one more time, and then we will run for the exits here.
Oh, okay. Well, being about as old as you, Kelly and Tom, I remember Survivor Series and stuff like that. It just throws me off because this is such an odd pairing. You got people who faces and heels on both teams that – you wonder why are they together. I felt like it would have been better. That's why I said the talking segment was bad, because you got some people talking in a face way. You got people like Waller, who I don't know what he is. And I thought I was going to get another Miz reference tonight, since we get one on almost every show now. even with The Miz on their own show, but that's another story. And I feel you, Tom, on your rant from earlier. But anyway.
I hold it in because I know I'm on the NXT show, so it gets perceived as like, well, of course the NXT guy doesn't like it, which, you know, that's at that point it's just coincidence. But, yeah, it stays within me, and then when I let like one little – when I open one little gasket to let a little bit of steam out, then it all just – it blows.
Oh, yes. Because it almost came up out of me while you were saying it. That's why I was happy I was on mute. But my last thing will be on this. First, I hate what they did, the Cameron Grimes in that segment, but especially after last week. And y'all know I'm a story guy. And I think no character in NXT, I mean completely none in my eyes, are worth following and watching develop, except Cameron Grimes, especially after what they did with him last week in the promo that he cut. So that's one thing. And so this goes into my overall question. It's something that Tom was bringing up earlier, in which I was speaking on early in the show. And I know you were saying what people, how people are watching the show and different things. And my question would be, if you're someone who's watching it for developmental, because I've been watching NXT just probably as long as you guys, I watched first run of those 8-year shows. But if somebody's saying they're watching it for developmental, to watch something in my eyes to be developmental, you want to see where these people go. And obviously, with you trying to develop something for Vince McMahon, that means it's going nowhere. And if you're someone who don't watch where they're probably developing to not go, because probably 98% of them won't make it there, that's a proven fact. But then wouldn't that be pointless of you watching somebody develop if they're not going to develop into whatever? And they're not going, and they don't know where they're going to develop and go to. So that would null that argument, because understandable when NXT 8 years ago, we were watching people develop. You seeing these guys today and even going outside of the company and stuff like that. But you saw most of them guys make it to the TV and see how they did. You see how Bo Dallas ended up being, where he was just somebody who was running around. I guess you could blame Bo Dallas for the reason why they got the 24/7 title, because remember, that's all he used to do, especially them later runs of NXT, was run around the ring, and that's what they had on 24/7 guy. So that's developing, watching somebody develop and seeing what happened and seeing the birth of that development. So my question would be, I understand you guys like to y'all stated y'all purpose on you watching it for the developmental portion of it, but is this real developmental? But since we don't know what they're developing for, even if they're going to develop into anything, because most of them might not even make it off of here to go anywhere, and if they do make it there, they're going to get changed again and have to develop on air on the big show. And they were supposed to be developing for that person, because that just make it hard for me. And that's a reason why probably next week could probably be the last time I call in or watch NXT, because I just want to see the fallout of this, because I fell out of this show. And probably out of almost all wrestling, really only other wrestling that I watch is probably UK and keep up with. And I really don't call any other shows except you guys, because I love talking to you guys. But that's my only downside about maybe not calling back no more, because I won't be able to get to speak to you guys except on Twitter. But that's my question about the developmental part. And thank you.
Well, damn, Darrell, I don't want to lose you either. thanks for calling, as always. A big picture question. What are they developing toward? That's a really, really good question. And that is a perhaps unspoken, even with all the things I've said about the changes, that is something that I've probably left unsaid, is Do I want to see them develop toward being favorites of a wrestling promoter that whose predilections I think are terrible? And I think that's a good question. What are these guys going toward? Because grizzled young veterans have gotten so much worse to watch. Like, they were, for me, appointment TV. And now I'm just like, oh, their segments are rough. It's a step backward for a lot of these guys. And it seems like they're moving toward, sometimes I don't know why I've watched WWE for as long as I have. For a long time, I'm sure it was just habit. Getting through some of the stuff that Russo did was really, really tough. And I just don't know why Vince has glommed on to so much of what he likes. I know why he did it at first, but the stuff he's doing doesn't draw anymore, but he's chasing it anyway. Like, he's basically doing a nostalgia trip, and I'm not going to say bankrupting his company as a result, but it's tanking. It not just this show, but all of them. This is big picture enough that it's getting me in all kinds of tangents. It's tough to, the changes in the show are difficult because of what we lost, but also because we want to see them develop, but if endgame is for them to be small role players on a show that I don't even like, then, because I don't watch Raw or SmackDown at all. I've jumped in. I probably watched 7 to 10 episodes total of Raw and SmackDown in 2021. That might be heavy. But if that's what they're working toward, then I'm not sure what I'm doing here. I just like to see people get better at stuff. Is that vague enough for you, Tom?
Yeah, I am with you in that regard. As I've said over and over again, it does so much to me. I think perhaps, well, I don't think Dana Brooke is the quintessential example of anything, but the quintessential of the examples that are leaping to mind. Dana Brooke very well encapsulates me just liking that journey in and of itself, regardless of the ultimate destination. Of course, you need the ultimate destination to go on the journey, but I remember reviling her among the women's division in NXT, and I was just like, yeah, she got hired because she's a pretty bodybuilder, and what is she doing? Her matches aren't even good. And then it started clicking, and the character came together, and the matches started working, and I was like, you know what? There's something there. And sure, nothing has panned out. The best thing that she ever had going for her was being Evil Emma's sidekick. But that's what got me invested in Dana, was watching her go from being putrid to being something that I thought was pretty decent, and saw her put the pieces together. So that works for me individually. Why do I stay with WWE? I know a lot of people don't like this answer, but it's the history. They are the company with the history, the belts. You know, no matter how many times they redesign them or add new ones or whatever, they have the lineage. There is weight and significance to being a WWE wrestler and accomplishing things in WWE. There is an actual meaning behind it, not just, you know, imaginary wrestling context that is only really backed up by how much how big your contract is and how much you're getting, you know, what cut of your merch you're getting and how much you're selling. And I feel, perhaps even in a grander sense, well, depends on how you look at it, but I feel that WWE has been for quite some time, well, I mean, basically started out this way when Vince was buying up the territories. And then, yes, I know started up is not the accurate way to frame that, but you know what I mean. Point WWE became the natural evolution of what professional wrestling is and how it can continue to succeed in the ever-evolving modern context. And that is why when criticisms get, batted around, like, well, they're not really a wrestling company anymore because they're not interested in, how many pay-per-view buys they get and selling you on a match. Their revenue streams are in a different place now, and that changes their how they go about things. But I still feel like it is the evolution of how to present and make profitable the entertainment genre of a worked sport. And there's a lot more that I could add into that. Kelly, you and I have had the conversation off air multiple times. But at least you've allowed me to field the rant that I very rarely have other places to jam it into. And to be fair, I'm kind of wedging it in here as well because it sort of came up in your response. But to focus in on this particular period of a lot of developmental talents not making it to their whatever their version of the gold pot at the end of the WWE rainbow is. If that keeps on happening, then WWE isn't going to have anybody. So it has to, like there's no way that it's not going to start generating people that they actually are going to start to use. And like I've always said, not everybody can be a main eventer, even someone as promising and, as promising as Cameron Grimes. And I totally agree with you there, Durrell. And you can see it in the way the company presents him as well, even though, yeah, tonight wasn't great in that regard, the post-match anyway. I do not see Grimes as a main eventer on those shows, but I see him as someone who can absolutely have a successful career if he is groomed, in this case, literally, to please the suits who are going to book him. There's a lot of it now that isn't, getting bloody and driving to the next town overnight and riding Space Mountain and whatnot. But it's different now, but I still think that WWE as the destination is the triumphant evolution of the pro wrestling business. And they're not. Yeah. Point made.
All right, Nate.
We're sorry. Nate does not have the mental capacity for big picture questions right now. Please rephrase the question and try again next week.
I love that you found a sound effect to okie dokie.
I'm impressed.
Yes, I don't know what I expected. That's great. And it keeps us on time. So Cameron Grimes defeats Andre Chase in 2:31 with the cave-in as per his want. Solo Sikoa defeats Idris Enofe in 4:19. I loved this match. I loved this match for where these guys are. I think for 4:19 for these two guys, this I like this. I like Solo. I really like Idris Enofe. I like him more. And I think there could really be something here, but we only got a taste of it so far. Boa comes out, attacks Solo. Idris makes the save only to be choked out. Solo makes that save and a little handshake. So Solo and Idris maybe going to be buddies here in the future. Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada defeated Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon. That match sure existed. It was a $1.56. And the only thing that I said in my analysis on the recap was, wow, Persia's got a long way to go, Nate.
Solo Sikoa and Idris Inoue. So I actually really, really dug this match. Not only did I just dig the match, I really dug Idris Inoue, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I think I am. From the video package, there were parts of the video package, like when he was talking about his past and being in I forget, was it Marines that he said he was in? But when he was talking about being in the services, that all seemed to flow natural, and it was kind of like he was just naturally speaking. And then he kind of started talking a bit more about like how people are keeping him down and stuff. And that some of that stuff kind of, I felt like didn't come from the heart, wasn't kind of coming from his voice. And it was like scripted a little bit, but that's really just nitpicky. I liked that video package and kind of introducing the character in almost a, I hate to use the term prime target, but like an almost a prime target type of a video. Like I immediately thought of the video with Kushida that they did a couple years ago now at this point. They did with the Kushida, they brought in his family and all these pictures, and I think they shot it at his house and stuff like that. It wasn't quite that in depth, but I like the fact that they kind of went there with the character, gave him some backstory, gave us a reason to latch onto him and actually want to see him and want to see him succeed. The match itself I thought was great. I thought they played off each other really well. I've already gushed about Solo Sikoa quite a bit on the show here, so you guys know what my stance is on him. I'd love to see these two actually be some sort of a force together. Matter of fact, when they were just squaring off to start the match, I was thinking to myself, like, not only do they have kind of a similar style, they have a very similar look as well, similar hairstyle, the kind of like shaved sides of the head, kind of, similar style there. So I feel like they look like a good pairing. They look like a good tag team. I don't necessarily want to see Solo Sikoa like become a tag team player here, in a tag team. But if him being in a tag team helps him grow and develop as an NXT talent, and in contrast to WWE, also WWE talent by becoming an NXT talent, but it helps him grow to be part of that tag team, then I'm for it. But I think Solo Sikoa has, like, maybe not Roman Reigns potential, but I definitely see like some singles potential out of him. Idris Inoue, same thing. I want to see a little bit more out of him. I have no idea who this guy is, where he came from. Tom, you might know a little bit better than me because you kind of have a bit more of a finger on the pulse of like some of the indie guys, things like that, that get signed and who's in the Performance Center or whatnot. But from the video package and then what I saw in the ring, as well as just his overall presentation, like his entrance and the way he presented himself, I was impressed. So I'm looking forward to see where he goes and what they kind of do with Idris Inoue going forward. And as far as the Persia Indy and Yulisa Leon Valentina Feroche match goes, I'm kind of right there. It existed. I kind of feel bad for Indy Hartwell here, as we were talking earlier in the show, she's kind of taken the biggest hit from the way breaking up, or not really breaking up, but not really being a thing anymore. So I kind of feel bad for her here. Persia really does have a long way to go, but is what it is. I don't really have much more to say about that. So Tom, over to you.
Yes, I'll tell you what, as is his wont, I appreciate the enunciation there. Man, you accidentally text a guy the wrong version of wont one time, and, anyway.
Oh, you'll never hear the end of it, pal.
Yeah, I know it's derived from wanton. I just accidentally spelled it incorrectly the one time, and I owned up to it when you were trying to give me the out of autocorrect, which I have turned off because autocorrect drives me insane. But I saw Inoue out there and I expected that it might get mentioned that, like, oh, maybe Tom knows about this guy. In this case, I do not. Usually it's just generally sometimes there, well, in the past there's been like Coconut Loop insights and whatnot. Ever since the pandemic, it's been more difficult. This is not one I'm familiar with. My only, you know, other than the fact that I enjoyed it for what it was, my only takeaway from the women's tag is that Valentina, Yulisa, and also Erica Jan are really capturing my eye. I know Valentina's been doing her thing for a while, but these three women's enhancement, you know, people, I think there's potential. Like when we were looking at now Ridge Holland and Fabian Aichner. It's been so long. I'm forgetting Ridge Holland's original name. But anyway, when we were looking at those guys just being enhancement, we're like, there's something here. And here we are, you know, multiple time championships for Aichner and involved in a major stable. And Ridge is up there on the main roster playing fanboy for Sheamus. Weird role they've got him in, but it seems to be working so far. I mentioned that as a springboard because I know that Valentina, Yulisa, and Erica are all wrestling on 205, and 205 now, if you know, even though it's not what it was, you know, per Nate's question earlier in the night, it's a preview now of all of these people who are debuting on NXT, and we're like, who the heck are these people? Like, Enofe, I had to look it up real quick. It was only just recently, I think just last week, that he debuted on 205, but it would have been a bit of a preview. And so even though I say this all the time, I still probably won't go out of my way for 205, I am at a point now where I feel like I'm missing something. And it does feel like it's a good show to watch if you're interested in people like this who may be less conspicuously talented, but do have potential. Enofe, for being a guy that I hadn't heard of 5 minutes prior, definitely made a good impression. Haven't noticed Sokoa doing, and I know there's a name for it and I've forgotten what it is, but putting his hands up like Rusev at the bell, noticed that. And I was like, it's the Rusev thing. Cool, I think. And then I thought it was hilarious that, you know, just prior to this, Boa had confronted Sokoa in the hallway in the back or like during an interview, I think, because that's what you do. And then when Boa runs out wearing, yes, wearing makeup, but wearing makeup he has worn multiple times now, Wade Barrett is like, who the hell is that? I'm like, yeah, it's the guy who was literally just talking to him and seeming like he was going to have an issue. Not much of a mystery, dude. I don't know. I'll forgive him for trying to sell it. And then Grimes versus Chase. Yes, I said last week that I figured the confrontation would lead to exactly the segment that we got, to exactly the match that we got tonight. And as goofy as Chase's whole thing is, I feel like he has quickly become a reliable heel enhancement with some flavor to go with it. So he's a welcome component to the show as far as I'm concerned. And this week's thought that I had after we stopped recording, it's been in the back of my mind all week, like, oh, man, if only I'd had that sooner, I could have said it on the show, is that because we noticed Bodhi Hayward, and I did double-check this time, that is the name that Brady Booker is now going by, the guy with the long blonde hair. You know, Kelly had noticed him in Andre Chase's classroom, and we noticed him following Chase around last week. I'm now starting to think, on top of the prediction that Grimes wins at War Games, and furthering that prediction into thinking that he is in a prime spot to be a surprise Royal Rumble entrant, and that being his call-up, because, you know, predicting call-ups always goes so well for us. We have such a great track record of predicting call-ups.
In the Royal Rumble alone, we've screwed up. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
It would have been perfect
for
Damian Priest. I stand by that.
Yeah, it's true. My big one was predicting Casey Catanzaro, and I've just been riding that wave ever since. I was like, yep, Casey got in when she was still extremely new. And I'm still patting myself on the back for that one, and I'll anyway.
I predicted Miz number one and then Aleister Black debuting at number two with his coffin rise.
That's right.
Yep. And man, it would have been so good. The E, yep. Just do it. Just do everything that I come up with offhand.
I think now that we are going to I don't know. It feels like a weird prediction to make as I'm saying it out loud, but I'm going to go ahead and voice it and stick to it and pat myself on the back on the off chance it actually happens. I think that after War Games, we are going to circle back to Chase having an issue with Grimes, and this time we'll see it in the form of Grimes versus Bodie Hayward, and Grimes will put Hayward over in his final NXT match. That's going to be my call right now. Oh, the other weird thing about this, the match was good. You know, your usual Andre Chase enhancement match, which have been good so far. The weird thing about this, and I would have to go back and pause it, but when Chase did his cheering section thing, I could have sworn I saw Tiffany Stratton in the cheering section, which seems like a place that they would have stuck her before going to these rich girl videos. But now that she's in them, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't her, but it sure looked like her.
Yeah, I could. If they shot these things out of sequence, I could see that happening. Like, I could see happening on the previous version of NXT before what they're calling 1.0, apparently, 0.0. Okay,
how many 0.0s can you actually break it down into? I think we're on, like, six now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, really. So, real quick, Idris Nofe is the new ring name of, and I'm going to butcher this name, Inyin Umo. It's Inyene Umoh. He was a U.S. Navy veteran who made his debut, but he signed with WWE after attending the Las Vegas camp after SummerSlam just this past August. So
yeah,
he's actually made it to TV pretty quick.
That was right after 2.0 was announced, I think, and they were like, okay, yeah, we need to try some people out for this new division. So so there's your, you know, your giant who can't work that, you know, we all of us, every single one thought that that Vince was going to exclusively sign. There he is, guys.
Yes. Okay. So we go to, there's a few other things that happened on this show. MSK got to a place and their GPS called them dipshits, which, I mean, yeah. Imperium, and then, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner showed up. O'Reilly gives this sweet, impassioned speech, like, brief but very full of babyface fire, and says a mission statement on winning the championships. And Von Wagner says, "And you guys are dumbasses." And then and that's what he says, and then there's a pause, and I'm like, I'm so glad if that had to happen. I'm glad it happened to Von Wagner, because that character is so bizarre he can absorb that. Tiffany's epiphany.
And later on they showed I think we're having like audio delay tonight, and that's why we're talking over each other more than ever.
We are.
But they showed the match graphic, like, here's the tag match that's going to happen at TakeOver. And I forget which person on commentary said it, but they said that Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner are challenging the intelligence. That wasn't the exact quote, but something. They're challenging the intelligence of Imperium. It's like, yeah, one of them called them dumbasses. That's what happened.
Yes, they're trying to keep it PG when the wrestlers are going ever further toward the M rating. And then Zion Quinn talked to Elektra Lopez. That happened, and Elektra. By the way, Elektra is now the person whose name I forget every week. I go to our chat every week to make sure what her name is before I type it in the recap. Sorry. And yet when she speaks, I'm like, I can see why I forgot her. One of you's not muted. I'm just going to guess that it's
sorry.
Nate. Yeah. Just took a wild stab there and said, Nate, okay. So one more email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a solid episode. I've been thinking, well, I think I've been watching this way, but Doc Bruce was on Wrestling Night in America this week, and he made a great point about the discrepancy that some viewers are having with the black and gold version versus the 2.0 version. His main idea was that this current version more closely aligns with the early televised NXT show than the one at the height of the Takeover era, and many fans only tuned in during the glory days. If you keep that in mind, I think the show becomes a lot more palatable for the heyday viewers. That said, what do you all make of the current Index storyline? I'm not sure it's doing a lot for Indy, but I'm certainly fine to ride it out. Also, how do you all see the two War Games matches finishing? Any surprises for either match? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Seconded. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yeah, we already talked about War Games and how we thought that would probably happen, and certainly, yeah, the question of how you watch this show is going to come up a lot. I think a lot of the complaints we get are going to be from the people who don't know what this show was at the beginning, who don't know what this show was meant to be, or they know. And once NXT, God, I want to call Black and Gold 2.0 because it is. But the ones who thought Black and Gold was the NXT that was intended, or they just loved it a lot, decried it and could not get over the loss of it, but, you know, talk that to death. I think we're pretty good on Catani's email, so anything on that and the last couple of things, Tom?
Yes, I did appreciate Doc Bruce bringing that up on Wrestling Night in America in the context of a conversation that he and I have had, and of course that correlates with a lot that I've said on the podcast, so there that all is. Yes, listen to 8YB. Kelly, have you yet looked at what our movie topic is this week?
No, you vaguely alluded to it, something about villains, and I'm like, oh, I better look that up because villains are something of a pet project of mine.
On
stage. Go ahead.
Yes, so I will have the pleasure of telling you live on the air that our movie topic is fantasy casting Kelly Wells in 6 different roles. So you'll get to do it and I'll get to do it. So if you are VIP and you listen to 8 years back, yes, we are going to be talking about the NXT episode. We haven't watched it yet. I don't know. I think, did they announce the title match between Neville and Bo? That might be happening on this episode, or maybe they'll just be teasing it for the next, well, whatever. There's good stuff going on with Zayn and Neville and Dallas.
I'm sorry, Tom. I don't give a shit about any of that. The questions about me.
Yeah.
Yes. Brian Alston, you're the greatest of all contributors. Thank you. I just wanted to get that in there.
I've got my answers prepared, and they're fun. I always prioritize. I'm always saying, like, hey, on 8 years back, we're talking about these movies, and people are like, why? You said it was a wrestling podcast. Oh, right, yes, I should pay lip service to the fact that it at least half the episode every single week is about the episode of NXT that aired 8 years back to the day. The Index storyline, Catani, I'm enjoying this little interim phase. I think Indy is, I have for quite a while, and I still think Indy is very entertaining. I've obviously pegged Persia as my Dana Brooke to be, if you will. We'll see how that pans out. I'm enjoying it. I have no idea what is going to come of it. I don't think I have any predictions for that, but what was the, the video packages. Yes, I already said that I thought, or did I say, well, whatever. Tiffany Stratton was, again, superb this week. I loved what they did last week. I loved, again, what they did this week. It just, they are 100% nailing what they're going for in making these packages seem like a reality show about an out-of-touch jet-setter who doesn't understand what money means to people who weren't just born with a lot of it. I'm so interested to see how this character comes in, and of course what she can do in the ring as a former gymnast. I have a feeling that I'm going to, if she doesn't just like crap her pants during her entrance, I have a feeling I'm going to like it quite a bit. And I think the only one I really have further thoughts on? Oh, well, you know, the Draco Anthony thing, I liked too much for one episode. I think it bears repeating every single week that this should be an hour-long show on Peacock. If the ratings continue to erode and they put it on Peacock as part of, like, whatever is going on with USA is going to go on with USA, but it adds to the amount of content that Peacock is getting. So cool for WWE either way, I think. You know, they can assuage it. It should go back to that. Oh, right. That's Draco Anthony is where I started there. So yes, Draco, I just liked that he was sitting by himself and he said, you know, you want to know all about me? Well, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to wait and I'm going to show you. Okay, well, I'm intrigued. That's a way to hook me, especially since it goes counter to the other philosophy that we've been seeing a lot of lately, like Tony D'Angelo, where they do multiple segments and each one is talking about a different facet of who he is and where he comes from, and so we know the guy before he shows up, which is great too. But I also like the other way. Unfortunately, it looks like I'm ending with MSK tonight then. These things, I mean, and for what it's worth, I don't think we ever said it, but it was pretty easy to predict that that they were going to hold off until War Games to do the Shaman reveal. So here we are, and that is exactly what we're going to do. But these have just been so dumb. These have been dumb to the point that when they're driving around in a yellow car and the GPS is talking to them, I would have it would have fit seamlessly into the way these have been presented if that yellow car turned into Bumblebee from the Transformers. It would have perfectly made sense in how dumb these have been, which is just further damage. Is that how we want to phrase it? Not really. It's damage added to a team that needed to have a turnaround in the fans' eyes right now. And that's unfortunately where MSK finds themselves.
Yeah. How does this translate to in-ring change? I don't understand. Like, you can do all of this, and then all of a sudden they're in the ring in reality. And so what has any of these segments gained for them?
Yeah, as the NXT tag team that had the best record before they lost one, because I think – are the Viking Raiders still undefeated? Or I don't know. We'd have to ask Harley. But they have one of the very best NXT records ever. And they have the exact same match every single time the bell rings. So, yeah, I don't foresee it changing anything, no matter what the Shaman tells them.
Yeah. Tiffany spends a lot of time in the gym, so you were predisposed to love her. So that'll
there
happen.
You go.
Yeah. She's – but I look forward to seeing what she can do. Feel like I had another smart-ass comment for you, but I can't think of what it was. I liked Transformers as a kid, so what happened to them was really not fortunate.
I don't know if I would have thought of it if the third the one with Leonard Nimoy wasn't on before NXT, so I caught the end of it. Even my 6-year-old son, who you'd think that I would have to shelter him from the Transformers out of fear that he would love it, he walked up to me and said, "Are you really watching this?"
Wow.
Tom, he's exquisite. That's wonderful. Oh, man. High five, low five for that kid when I see him next. Nate.
So the only thing that I really kind of wanted to bring up, even just mention that we haven't yet, because honestly, like, just about everything else, I think you guys have pretty much covered. But one of the things that Kevin said in his email, or asked in his email, any surprises for either match? And I don't know if this may, if this might be a surprise for, like, men's war games or not, but there's a name that we haven't actually talked about at all that's still on NXT, and that's Samoa Joe. And I actually just looked it up. Like, I kept thinking he was like Future Endeavored again, but he wasn't. He's still kicking around. And he's got a claim to come back and get the title he never lost. So I don't know. Like, I'm wondering, you know, if we might see, you know, Samoa Joe show up at the end of War Games, or the end of the men's War Games match. Yeah, to challenge Ciampa or something along those lines. But there's something that crossed my mind. Samoa Joe, we haven't talked about him at all. And he was the former champion. He didn't lose his belt. He was injured and had to relinquish it. And I'm sure he's probably okay by now, because I don't believe it was like a super – I forget what the injury was, but I don't think it was anything like major. I don't know. That's something that could potentially happen at War Games or in the near future if they bring Samoa Joe back, because I feel like he's not what they're looking for NXT, but who knows?
Yeah, in my deepest conspiracy theory moments, I'm just like, was Samoa Joe the straw that broke the camel's back, and Vince redid everything when Trips hired Samoa Joe right after he was fired. Wish that Vince wasn't as such that I could think that was really, really easy to believe, but I find it easy to believe. Wrestling on this show, 49 minutes, 25 seconds. That is, again, this minute, wrestling minutes are really similar again after a super dip in the time when we were introducing everybody. It's back to normal. This is, in a lot of ways, this is built the same way. The opener, closer, and the crossover match are long again, right around the same amount of time that they were before. This show is laid out very much in the same way it was Black and Gold. It's just very, very different talent pool, and a very young talent pool that we are pulling from. So yes, I can't wait to talk about all the exact same things next week that we talked about this week. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Tom.
At Tom Staup and Willing Creatures on YouTube, yes, but now on your favorite podcasting app. It's on whichever one you listen to podcasts on. I know a lot of us, PW Torch folk use Downcast. I think it's even more compatible with iTunes. You know, I still call it iTunes. Apple Podcasts now. We're on everything. So go to at Tom Staup on Twitter or at WillingDND. I wanted Willing Creatures, but it's one character too long, and Willing Creature didn't really work. But the RSS feed is there for copy and pasting. We have some direct links as well. Whatever works best for you. The next episode coming out this Saturday is one that I haven't even listened to yet because my character wasn't a part of it. We are in a phase of the story right now where there are a lot of secrets that are going on that we are having to be obedient and not spoil for ourselves, the players. It's getting juicy.
Nate.
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses for PWTorch.com. And like I said earlier, they're up on the website for you to check out if you'd like to do that. And for my D&D stuff, at DegeTime on Twitter, DegeTime. Also on YouTube, we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. We are about to go into a little bit of a holiday hiatus because, quite frankly, I don't feel like editing videos during the holidays. So I'm not gonna. But we're going to be going on a little bit of holiday hiatus. When we come back, we'll be playing a game called Early Dark, which is one of the more crunchy games. A lot of rules-focused, rules-heavy. Taking a look at that therapeutically. It was actually kind of a similar theme to Tom. It's the one game that I was not a part of this season because crunchy games are not really my thing. I kind of like more of the role-playing aspect, but that's just me. But we're going to be doing that. That's coming out probably early February, maybe late February, maybe March. Depends on when I get back to it. But check it out. There's a plethora of other content up there as well to check out too. We've got just over 100 videos up on the channel now at this point.
Make your way to Games by James in Minnesota or Wisconsin and pick up my game, Fun Dead, the greatest show on earth, the board game that pits circus folk against zombies. Nobody's done that, and I did it. It's a game, and you can buy it, and you should buy it, and I will harm you if you don't. Tom, you've done it, so no need to harm you.
Oh, God, I need a credit card.
Nate, hurry your ass up, and then you can play against me, and I can beat you in it, too.
If I'm not here next week, you know why.
Everyone will know why. Cheers, everyone.